Future Hacker. Life. Path. Future.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Future Hacker. This episode is part of our Young Hackers project, in which we are talking to amazing young guests between the age of 12 and 20 years old. The Young Hackers series is a partnership between Future Hacker and BeSingular, a unique learning platform on exponential technologies that empowers the next generation to create real and responsible impact by working with the technologies of future. Young Hackers will be able to collaborate with BeSingular's digital channel and will get to publish their blogs, articles, also have an opportunity to be selected as BeSingular ambassadors with special discounts on the courses. And today, we are talking to Helena Branco. Helena is a young activist from São Paulo, Brazil. She studies international relations and public policy at the Federal University of ABC. She was the first Brazilian teen advisor for Grow Up and is currently a Woman Deliver Young Leader. She coordinated the movement Free to Menstruate, which has introduced and passed more than 40 municipal bills and 9 state bills in all Brazilian regions. Helena was on the forefront of mobilizing against the presidential veto on delivering menstrual products, and she spoke at the public hearing in the House of Representatives about the subject. Her main interests are public policies, innovation concerning menstrual rights, particularly in the Global South, the role of youth-led mobilizing in advancing gender equality, and the political representation of women and youth. Hi, Helena. It's just amazing to have you with us today. How are you doing?
I'm great. It's such an honor to be here. I'm a fan of the podcast, so it's incredible to be listening to you saying my name, my introduction. It's amazing being here.
And you know, right? It's actually the second time she's with us. So Helena did an interview for the Brazilian channel, right, Helena? And you know, our Brazilian partner, André, was so impressed by her that she was like, she has to go to the US channel. Like, that's my pleasure. So thanks again for being here with us. One more time, I think it's amazing to be able to give you the voice also to have a global reach. A lot of amazing projects in here. But you know what? I'd like to begin by, you know, getting to know you a little better. What's your story? How were you raised? Is there anything about the way you grew up that you believe encouraged you to be where you are today? Anything about your family? Like, you know, why are you the way you are today? Tell us.
Well, hi, everyone. My name is Helena Branco. I'm 19 years old. I'm from São Paulo, Brazil. And I definitely believe that being raised by women was something pivotal in me growing up to be a change maker, to be a gender equality activist. So I was raised by women whose work was to give back to the community. My mom's a nurse, and both my grandmother and my aunt are teachers. So I always looked up to them and asked myself, how can I give back to my community? How can I engage in something that is meaningful to more people than just me? And well, soon enough, I guess I was confronted by other question, which is how can youth engage in social change? Because I would always have this little spark in me that wanted to do this change, to act on it, but I didn't really have the space to do that. And so I would reach out to volunteer organizations and be like, hey, I'm 15. Do you take volunteers as young as 15 to work with whatever? I tried like 30 organizations because I really, really wanted to engage in something for the community. But all of the organizations were like, you're too young. We can't, you know, like have you here because you're too young. You would have to have your parents with you. And my mom would work all day. And I mean, my family would work all day. It was just me, you know, I couldn't have my family with me while I would volunteer. So I would have to find another way to do so. And I was confronted by the question, do youth deserve a seat at the table? You know, because I guess every time I would go to these organizations, they would say, oh, you're too young. We don't have space for you. I'd be like, where do youth deserve a seat at the table? And I guess that was when I found Girl Up, which taught me a very important lesson, which is Not only you deserve a seat at the table, but a microphone to speak up. Our voices do really matter, and we do have things to add up to our communities. And so when I was in the second year of high school, I learned about Girl Up, and when I looked at, you know, youth and girls' protagonism and our potential for transformation and the fact that they actually believed it. And it's not only about believing the power of young women and girls, but about giving us the tool to actually develop our leadership and for us to be able to actually impact our communities and have the network and the resources and all of it. And so when I found Girl Up, which is a global movement for gender equality from the United Nations that trains, inspires, and connects girls to, well, impact our communities and eventually our countries and the world, I thought, well, this is my place. This is where I want to be. This is where I can develop myself and feel that I do actually deserve a seat at a table and a microphone to speak up, that I can actually add up and learn from other incredible women and girls who are making this change that I want to make in my community.
I absolutely love it, and I'm glad that you actually found a place. What I did like that you said, that they're not only giving you the voice, but they are providing you the knowledge, they are providing you the training. So, you know, they're doing their whole thing, not only to empower the youth, but also somehow coach it, right? So for the listeners that have never heard about Girl Up, like, you know, could you just do an overview? Like, which are the main causes, which you believe are the main challenges, or even the key factors for this program for the success?
All right, so Girl Up has many programs, but the program that is, well, what runs Girl Up is the club program. So clubs are basically girl collectives in which girls, well, they gather, usually girls from the same school, the same community, they gather up so they can think about solutions in gender equality that their communities need, or the girls themselves. You know, sometimes we want to participate in debates that have certain topics and we don't see our communities debating it, and we think it's essential for our communities to be talking about it. I mean, there's so many possibilities, but well, where you see a possibility, a Girl Up leader is usually there saying, hey, I want to take advantage of this. I want to explore the opportunities in my community. So usually this girl finds out about Girl Up and is like, I want to do this in my community. I want to create a club. So this girl goes on our website, and we have everything there. And usually, or Instagram actually is the main point where girls can gather all the information they need. At Girl Up Brazil is our Instagram. So girls go there and find everything about Girl Up clubs. They usually gather with other 5 girls. Usually it's very small in the beginning, and they create like this advisory board for the club, and they create this club in their community, they register it in our platform, and they start doing their activities. So Girl Up has about like 10 years, is like about 10 years old in 10 or 11 in the US, but in Brazil it got here only in 2018. And well, it had like 0 clubs, but as I say it, it was never lack of interest. There was a lack of support network and opportunity to hands-on learning for girls. So we have this clubs program in which everyone can participate in, not only girls, but there we have some boys too. But of course, the protagonism here is for girls. But every young person can just go and create their clubs. And we have this super important and pivotal program that is the club program, but we have another program, which is the teen advisor program, which is the one I got in first, and I actually got to New Girl Up from another program. And the teen advisor program is actually a program which happens every year. So you have, like, as a teen advisor, you have a 1-year tenure in which you participate in the decision making of the organization, you give your inputs and how you think Girl Up can reach out to other girls, and it's an international program. So every year about 20 girls, young women, are selected to participate in this. So in 2018, when Girl Up started in Brazil and they hired someone, I was selected also as a Girl Up Teen Advisor. I was the first Brazilian to participate in it. So it was really crazy because there wasn't Girl Up in Brazil. So I was like, oh my God, what is it going to be here? And so I got in, like, I got to know Girl Up through another program that wasn't the club program, but it's impossible not to fall in love with the club program. So I became a teen advisor, and then I became a Girl Up club leader. I created Girl Up Somos Plurais, we're plural, this is a name for a club in São Paulo, and well, my journey of transformation started here. So you have like many possibilities to start your transformation journey with Girl Up, either in the Teen Advisor program, which is a little bit selective, and so like 20 girls from all over the world, it's really amazing, but it's selective. But you also have the opportunity to join as a club leader, and anyone can join. There's no like selection or anything. All you need is your desire to create change.
And do you have access to, as it's a global organization, understand it, and you have the United Nations participation somehow, is it under the United Nations or a partner of the United Nations? But do you actually get to have case studies from other countries? Do you get to share information about what's going on around the world?
So first thing about the United Nations, I think is a very important point that you brought. So Girl Up was first founded as a campaign of the United Nations Foundation. So the United Nations basically decides stuff and do like the important documents and all of this. And the United Nations Foundation was created to basically put those plans into action. So we were first a campaign created by United Nations Foundation to work with youth leading the change for gender equality. But then they realized that it wasn't just a campaign, it was a movement. It grew so fast, and they were like, oh my God, girls really need this, they want this, they are engaging in this. So we became a movement, and now we're working on it to become like a Girl Up Brazil outside, Girl Up in Washington. So Washington is the headquarters of the United Nations Foundation, and now in Brazil we'll have a different relation with the United Nations Foundation, since we're like under Girl Up, not under the UNF. So it's a little bit messy here. But basically, when you engage as a teen advisor in Girl Up and in the international programs of Girl Up, you do have access to the United Nations Foundation, which is crazy and amazing. So, for example, we have the Leadership Summit that happens every year. The Girl Up Leadership Summit happens in Washington. Now it's virtual, but it used to happen in Washington. And every girl who would participate on it would get the chance to get to know the United Nations Foundation headquarters and eat some ice cream in there and talk to their friends and, I mean, newly made friends from the conference. So it was really amazing. We have this very cool relation with the United Nations Foundation precisely because it was founded by it. But now we're a separate organization. So as you asked your second question, we do have this really beautiful thing, which is like this network. I think one of the most beautiful things about Girl Up is the network that it created. So when you access, for example, the platform in which you register your clubs, the new clubs and everything, you go there and register your club, you have access to all the other clubs all over the world. So we are in more than 100 countries and we have more than 4,000 clubs. So it's a lot of people, a lot of girls doing incredible work. So you can engage with them in a platform, but usually girls get to know each other through Instagram. So usually clubs have Instagrams, and in Brazil, in Tanzania, in Australia, in all over the world. And so my club, for example, reached out to a club in Canada to talk about women in tech. And so Australia, clubs in Australia have great activism in climate change and climate action. And so you can just, you know, get to know Girl Up girls in other countries and, you know, reach out to them. Of course, there's like a language barrier, but if you do know English or, I mean, any other language, for example, in African countries that speak Portuguese, we do have a connection with them as well. We can just reach out and be like, hey, I want to create this club and I see that you're doing amazing work. We have like a totally transparent network in that, and not only internationally, but in Brazil as well. We have like about 200 clubs here in more than 20 states. And so it's really amazing because it's a really, really national network. I mean, you make a lot of friends from all over the country. And usually when we see like bigger actions or actions that engage more people, it usually becomes a national articulation, not just a club or a region. It's like the whole Brazil is talking about now, like all the clubs are.
Yeah, sure. No, that's super, super important. And, you know, being able to exchange information with other culture, that's honestly priceless, right? So I'm curious. So one of the main causes, as you mentioned, is the Free to Mainstream movement. And I was stunned by some information, at least when it comes to Brazil, that, you know, 25% of Brazilian teenagers can't afford beds and they end up missing about 40 days, 45 days at school every year. This is shocking. And I see the importance and I really admire the work you've done. As we mentioned, we were introducing you and how you were able to change the bills, change the law and make sure that they're going to have the access to add a job, you know. So I'm just curious if you could talk a little about this program, about, you know, having access to the girls. And I was just wondering, how could this movement be expanded into something that would also embrace sustainability? As we know, you know, the pets aren't the best path when it comes to the nature and to being more sustainable. And we do know that we do have solutions that are more natural, that, you know, we could be using even, you know, the clothing, the panties to build something more absorbent and you can wash it instead. So maybe just teaching the community how to do it themselves. Of course, a partnership with the public sector would be needed to be donating the materials and making it even a business. So we would be able to join empowerment with sustainability, with an economical return. So are you aware of any projects in this direction? Anything you could share with us on this direction? So it's Future Hacker. We need to talk about, you know, making a positive impact, making it sustainable. So it's something that I couldn't avoid asking you.
Yeah, sure. So taking a step back, so about our movement. Well, Free to Menstruate started in April of 2020. So we have this thing in Brazil, I think, especially in the Global South, the essential need baskets, which are delivered by the government for vulnerable communities. So we found out that most essential need baskets that were being delivered by the government during the quarantine and the pandemic, they didn't include menstrual products. And also that goes as well for the essential need baskets being delivered by other organizations supporting those communities. And well, it wasn't only on the pandemic, but in other situations. The pandemic was just like a catalyst for us to discover the fact that, you know, like the pandemic deepened the absurdly vulnerable situations of millions of people in Brazil. And we thought, well, so how can one choose between buying a meal for their family or buying menstrual products? Besides that, we found out that Brazil is one of the countries which has the higher taxes on menstrual products in the world. And so it is not accessible, it's not affordable for most Brazilians. And in the state in which I live, São Paulo, for example, before our advocacy, the taxes made up almost 30% of the price of the product. So it's a lot. And we're talking about limiting access for people in vulnerable settings financially and socially because of those taxes. And they are that high because menstrual products are not considered essential items and therefore do not integrate essential need baskets and so on. And so we first did an emergency action, as we call it, hashtag urgent pads, in which we raised more than 60,000 menstrual products. Well, in 7 states, it was really national articulation between 16 girl-up clubs. It was really beautiful. And we understood that there was this gap. No one was talking about menstruation. No one was talking about period poverty, which is basically when you don't have access to menstrual products, when you don't have access to sanitation for you to have a healthy menstrual cycle, and when you don't have the education about your body and about menstruation. So it's usually this, we call period poverty, this 3 pillars. And so after we raised this money and we did all this action collecting the menstrual products, we understood that It was not only about providing access to them, but providing information as well. So not talking about menstruation is already a way of talking about it. And that is a really beautiful sentence from a friend of mine, Caroline Moraes, which is a researcher who published a study with UNICEF about menstruation in Brazil. And so, well, it was really, really shocking for us also finding out that there is a tremendous lack of data when it comes to period poverty in Brazil. And well, that is, of course, just a symptom of the fact that we do not talk about menstruation. Menstruation is considered just a private thing and not, as the UN considers it, a matter of public health and human rights. And well, we knew that after we did the hashtag urgent pads that it was only an emergency action. We needed a long-lasting impact on period poverty. So the first club that was brave enough to do it was Girl Up Elsa Soares, which is a club from Rio de Janeiro, that showed us that girls can impact public policy. And it was definitely a turning point for us because they just went to a representative in Rio de Janeiro and they were like, hey, we need to include menstrual products in essential needs baskets being delivered by the government. And now it is a law in the state of Rio de Janeiro, which is crazy. And it was crazy. Exactly. I know, I mean, like a girl of club, you know, it was like 15 to 16, 17 year old girls doing that, impacting public policy. And of course, there was never a lack of interest of girls in politics. There was a lack of a support network of this opportunity to just go there. And you know what I mean? The feeling that they had, that their voice mattered, so they could just reach out to a representative and be like, hey, this needs to be done. And it was. So it was incredible. And we, of course, felt that we could do much more. And there come the numbers of more than 40 public policies approved in more than 40 municipalities and 9 states. And it was incredible. And but of course, as you said it, there's a lot of room for innovation when it comes to menstrual health and menstrual rights. And how come that in 2022, we're talking about, I don't know, space mining, but we don't have solid policies to guarantee menstrual products for people who menstruate in vulnerable settings? I mean, it's, you know, like, how come in 2021, many still think that menstruation is something to hide and be ashamed of?
You know, lack of women representation at the end, right?
Exactly. I think that, I mean, not only do I think, but there are research that shows it. When we elect more women, women usually approve public policies more centered to vulnerable populations and to other women. And so, I mean, women are an investment, honestly, in public policies when it comes to health, education, and vulnerable communities. And so, well, as you said it, there's a lot of room for innovation. And one of the main points of it, I think, and which has been central in this conversation, is sustainability. And it is really tricky in Brazil and like in developing countries for us to think about it, because there's a lot of people, I mean, like almost half of the Brazilian population do not have proper access to sanitation. So I think one of the main questions here, as we think about sanitation and all that and access to it, is how can we provide reusable sanitary pads when people, most Brazilian people, would not have access to, like, to facilities to wash it and maintain their hygiene? So that's the first point, I think. When we think about sustainability, we have to understand that that kind of talk is for a very specific part of the population. It's a part of the population which has access to facilities to wash it and keep their hygiene and all of that. And so after that, of course, I mean, when we think, for example, people who live on the streets, and how are you going to provide them reusable sanitary pads if they cannot wash it? And, you know, it's really complicated. And we do, of course, need to include those people who menstruate in vulnerable settings in the conversation. And I think that the conversation that goes through sustainability has to think as well of the facilities and resources that not all people have access to. First point. The second point is, of course, there's a lot of people who have money, for example, to buy reusable sanitary pads and that could use more sustainable ways of managing their menstruation. And so I like to bring this example up because the thing is incredible. There's this world-leading social enterprise that is manufacturing reusable sanitary pads, which is called AfriPads. It acts especially in Uganda, manufacturing these pads. So women are hired to manufacture these pads, which means they are receiving, there is a source of income from these pads, and other women buy these pads, meaning they're having a more sustainable cycle themselves while helping other women to have another source of income. And of course, besides this ecosystem, there's also the part of including this amazing program in public policies. So I would imagine like a place like São Paulo, for example, having implemented a public policy in which you would generate a source of income for women who would manufacture these reusable sanitary pads. And the ecosystem itself becoming sustainable because you would sell them. And so other women would have more sustainable habits with their menstruation. And I mean, a city with the size of São Paulo would manufacture it and they could, for example, provide them to students in vulnerable conditions in public schools. And so we do now have like legislation in São Paulo, to buy pads to provide to students in vulnerable settings. So I would imagine like, why don't we rethink it and think how can we maintain it? Not only like, oh, we're going to buy from this company. Why can't we make it an income source program which can hire other women and, well, make room for innovation when it comes to that. And there is a lot of course, providing menstrual pads, it's really important first step. We didn't have it. It just started last year, so we did not have it up until last year, and now we do, which is a huge step, amazing. But how can we actually think about something that is sustainable, something that can not only improve menstrual health in the state, but can be sustainable and help the planet and help women generate income? So there are so many things that we can do and base ourselves in initiatives there are in the global south. So there are so many, especially African countries have like this social enterprises about menstrual health that are really amazing, that we could really be learning from that. India as well. So we don't have to just look at the US or Europe or whatever, thinking that innovation always come from the global north or something. No, the global south is producing incredible innovation, which we can learn a lot about. And Brazil is a huge country with a lot of people, with a lot of inequalities. And I think that is a great seed for innovation and for including these vulnerable people menstruating vulnerable conditions in the conversation as well.
You raised some really, really great points, Elena. Unfortunately, we're getting out of time here. You know, I really felt that we could be talking a whole afternoon here. So I have a very last question for you. And before my last question, so to all girls out there, we're just talking to this great role model. If you felt inspired, make sure you check out Girls Up website or at Girls Up Brazil, you said, right, Elena? On social media. So my last question to you is, how do you see our future in the coming decades? Do you feel more optimistic about it? Do you believe we are headed to a more inclusive and sustainable society? Or are you more concerned regarding the choices that we are making today? How do you feel about it?
Well, I'm an optimist about the future, especially when, because of Free to Menstruate, I had a lot of contact with women in the public sector and girls willing to just, you know, go and change society for a more gender equal and sustainable world. So I am very optimistic about where we're going. But of course, there's a long way until we get where we want. But I think that when we're activists and we look at the long way, sometimes we get lost. So I prefer to just look at the incredible women and girls doing this incredible work and be like, all right, we're heading the right way. We're conquering places in the Senate, in the House of Representatives, in, I don't know, like civil society getting to pass public policy. So, I mean, we're actually conquering a lot of stuff as women, as girls, as marginalized communities in conquering so many important spaces. So I think we're heading to a very bright future comparing to where we were. But of course, I think that eventually it comes to just the choices we make every day. And especially in a very defining year as this year for Brazil, I think that we need to think about inclusion and equality in our everyday choices and who we choose to support. For example, supporting Girl Up, engaging with Girl Up. And well, yeah, I guess being brief, that's it.
Thank you so much. It was such a pleasure having you again on the show. The doors will always be open for you. I'm pretty sure that, you know, you're going to accomplish some amazing things together with all the groups you're involved. So anytime you have news for us, just come back. Thank you. Thanks, everybody, for listening.
Thank you, Maria. Thank you, listeners. Bye.
Future Hacker. Life. Path. Future.